God. God, a lot of things are going to happen today. A lot of things have already been happening, and I ask that you'd give us the ability to relax and to soak in what you have for us today, and help my words be the exact words that you once said today. And that's in your name I pray. Amen. I got to give you the ground rules today. Here's the deal. I'm going to talk to you as if we were sitting on my back deck. In fact, that's what I try to do every week. And I said, I can't believe you said that. Well, that's what I would say to you on my back deck. And if I wouldn't say it on my back deck, I shouldn't say it, period. But I'm going to talk to you today. Really, I want you to imagine we're on my back deck and we're just talking. What is the big deal? What is the big deal with sex? And it's a big deal. God cares about it. He really does. It is a gift that God has blessed us with. We had our sign out in the corner, you know, sex, what's the big deal? And people be driving by and they've got their kids in the car. And poor Molly, our receptionist, she gets these calls and from these irate parents. Hey, my kid just, you know, saw a sign. Now I got to talk to him about sex. I heard that and I got excited every time, you know, said that. Because if you're a kid or you're old enough to read three letters, you're old enough to talk about something that's very important to God, and that is sex. It's better than the sign we were going to put out there. We were going to put out there, great sex here. We decided not to do that one. We pulled that one last minute. But sex is a gift. And I've learned that there are certain things that I get that I need to better understand how they operate. I'm a big tool guy. I like tools. My dad had tools in his basement. The only thing was he never taught me how to use them. He's a nuclear engineer, but he never wasn't really a handy guy, so he didn't teach me how to use these things. So I'd go out and want to do my tree forts or whatever, and I would just have to guess which tool I should get. You know, I'd get a regular screwdriver and try to jam it into a Phillips head thing. I'd get the wrong power thing to use, and it was very, very difficult. I'd try to use pop rivets, and I still have, like, scars on my leg when things would fall on me that shouldn't have fallen on me. Went on into college, and I got a construction job in the summers, worked as a grunt laborer. And during the weekends, the guy would let me use his tools in the cabinet shop. And so I'd go in there and figure, oh, I know how to use a router. No one's ever told me how to, but I know how to use a router. There's a thing that spin real fast, go, wee! Do you trim laminate like Formica with? And so I'm making myself a little table. I'm going, wee! And no one ever told me, never pull it towards you. And wee! And it jumped and wham! Right in the end of my thumb, just put cuts all the way down, practically the knuckle, blood spinning all over the place, all over the thing. And you know, and I had to learn, okay, now I know not to do that with the router. There's some things that you and I are doing sexually that we're bruising ourselves, we're bruising other people, and we're not following the manual of the person who designed sex to be a blessing. So we're going to take a look at some of the instructions from the manual today. We always took a look at some earlier in the service from the Song of Songs, also called Song of Solomon sometimes. Let's read some more of it. Song of Songs, chapter 5. And here's what happens. If you ever take a look at the Song of Songs, it is a beautiful, incredible picture of a sexual encounter. A beautiful picture of a loving, intimate relationship that includes sex. And it's kind of like a dream sequence. You know how your dreams sometimes they don't make a lot of sense? Like, what does a tricycle have to do with We'd Be Gone? You know, it's kind of in your thing, you're just not understanding. But when you wake up, you get the picture of exactly, you know, what it was all about. And that's kind of what Song of Songs is. There's these things that come in and out. Different characters come in and scenes come in and out. But it's a beautiful picture of relational, emotional, and sexual intimacy. And here's what it says. I have come into my garden, my sister, my bride. I've gathered my myrrh with my spice. I've eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I've drunk my wine and my milk. There's all kinds of poetic devices here, equating things on our bodies and things that we do sexually with other things. And you don't have to use your imagination. You can just start to understand what's being said here. And all of a sudden, this new character comes into the dream, and this new character is God. And God comes in and he says this. He goes, "Eat, O friends, and drink. Drink your fill, O lovers." God says, "Oh, bravo! Oh, bravo! Look at what... You're having awesome sex. I love that. I've designed you to have it. You're ravishing each other. You're drinking each other. Oh, bravo, bravo. Encore, encore." You don't think God would say that, would you? He does. He does. In the right context, He gets fired up. There's a whole book of the Bible to it and other portions throughout it that we're going to look at today. Let's keep going on because it even gets better. Yeah, here we go. It says this, my lover thrust his hand through the latch opening and my heart began to pound for him. I rose to open for my lover and my hands dripped with myrrh. My fingers with flowing myrrh on the handles of the lock I opened for my lover. One time Sigmund Freud was having a cigar at a party and he was famous for, you know, equating this means that. And somebody said, well, you know, what's the deal with you having a cigar? And he said, my friend, you know, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. You know, sometimes a lock is not a lock. It's something else. Talking about locks and talking about opening and talking about fluids. This is a very graphic, beautiful description of how sex is operating. This is not just some procreation of the planet has to get inhabited somehow, so God says, okay, well, I'm going to inhabit it through this thing called sex. No, it's an incredible, beautiful thing. See, in this place, we've got about 1,200 people in here right now. There's 1,200 different gardens in this place right now. Your life is like a garden. There are things that are growing in your life that are of value and are beautiful. There are things that are growing in your life that are thorny and are choking out other things. All of us are a garden. And we like to think that if God gets involved in my life, he just comes down and plops down a nice thing of sod. Boom! Beautiful life. Or God just kind of transplants a beautiful rose bush. Boo! Gardens don't work that way, do they? It takes years of cultivating. It takes years of encouraging the right things to grow by putting fertilizer on. It takes years of pulling out the stubborn weeds and tilling the ground. And in this place, however old you are, your life has been growing and going in a direction for as old as you are, and that includes sex. Your sexual life is like a garden. And if you've never seen it this way, you know that if you don't put the intentional time into putting the garden in the right place, the garden will be in the wrong place. See, in our society, all of us are growing sexually. And we're growing in large part by what we're exposed to in the media. We're growing in large part in what our friends tell us that they've been doing or what they want to do. An uncritical eye towards a garden leads to a garden that is out of order and doesn't produce lush fruit. And God says, I want you to have this unbelievable garden where there's these nectarines and lush fruit and things that are dripping. It's succulent. It tastes phenomenal. It's beautiful. And that's what sex is. That's what sex is like when it operates properly. And that's why God says, I want your sex. I want your sex because I want it to be aligned the way I've created it to be aligned to. We're going to call, you know, God Wants Your Sex. I thought about calling the series that. And, of course, I thought immediately of, you know, George Michael. We're starting to get old because we sent somebody yesterday to go get that CD. It was a kid in high school, Kevin. And I said, go get that George Michael CD. I said, who's George Michael? Never heard of George Michael. Bummer. Well, George Michael had it right. In some ways in that song, so it's going to be our outline. Sex is natural, sex is fun, sex is best when it's one on one. If you remember that whole thing, that's our outline. Sex is natural, sex is fun, sex is best when it's one on one. First thing, sex is natural. It is natural. We have sex urges. It is a natural thing for us to have sex urges. I'm going to tell you stuff today that you're not going to hear anywhere else. I'm going to be more graphic with you than you maybe ever expected to be. I'm going to tell you things today that you're not going to hear on PBS. You're not going to hear on the radio. You're not going to see modeled in movies. You're probably not even going to find a church that'll talk about it, many of them. This is just basic Bible God stuff. And we're not doing any of us favors by kind of holding back and trying to choose our words too carefully, okay? Sex is natural. Genesis 2, the very first book in the Bible. Very first explanation of how sex comes together comes with Adam and Eve. And here's what it says. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. It says, a way a great marriage operates is when a man and woman leave all other relationships as their primary human relationship, and they come together, they leave, and they cleave. Cleave. Cleveland, yes. They come together, and they become one flesh. And what this shows is when there is sexual intercourse, when we become one physically, it is showing and modeling that there's something else that is happening in the spiritual realm. Because when you come together sexually, and specifically in the context of marriage, God looks at us and says, you are no longer one person, you're no longer two people who are kind of doing life with one another. You are one person. You are one entity. And when we come together physically that way, we are physically, literally modeling what is spiritually the case. It is a physical reality that we are spiritual, spiritually one. It's interesting when you take a look at how animals have sex versus other created entities. How humans have sex versus other created entities. We talked last series about angels, a created entity by God. They are of spiritual matter, no physical matter. Angels don't have sex. They're of spirit. They have no sex. The only way they come into existence is God does whatever He can do, but angels don't have sex. Then we have animals. Animals are of physical matter, not the kind of spiritual matter that we are. Animals, they have sex, and there's nothing emotional about it at all. Nothing spiritual about it all. It's like, I smell something, wham, you know, I'm on that thing. They're not, by the way, if I say something, it's like a double entendre, I'm not intending to. But it's fine to laugh about it, let's just kind of go with it. Actually, sometimes I might intend to. Just laugh with it, it's, you know, and let's be real on the back deck here. Animals, so they're not going, hey, wait a minute, I'm little Wolfie, I was over there with little Mrs. Wolfie last year, and no, she didn't be hurting if I'm going over. They don't care. Little grasshoppers, they're leaving that encounter. It doesn't mean anything to them. There's no emotional thing to them. There's no spiritual thing. It is purely and strictly procreation. That's all it is. But then, yet us, you know, when you've had a sexual encounter with somebody, it's not like eating a banana. You know that. You know that when you leave, something just happened. There was a transaction that just took place. You know that you don't look at that person exactly the same. There's something that's happened. Realize that humans are the only species, great things, that have sex face to face. Everything else doesn't do that. The only ones have sex face to face. Because there's something about intimacy, emotional, spiritual intimacy. There's a connection there. It's not just a physical feel-good act. One of the things that struggle as our church grows is whenever I say something, there's always an expert in every area in the thing. And so yesterday I had someone from the zoo come up. Big Mucky Muck at the zoo. Say, well, you know, you're not exactly true about the face-to-face thing. I'm just saying, you're kidding. He said, well, there's one animal. I said, you're kidding. It's called a bonomo. Bonomo, and it's 97% genetically human. I said, oh, interesting. All right, so there's one, I guess, in the rest of creation. And it's 97% what we are. That tells us something. Sex was something God designed. It was a bonding agent. It was something that was going to be a spiritual and emotional connection. And that's the way it is. And it's natural. It just naturally is that way. We naturally have these sex urges. We naturally have this desire to experience this for emotional reasons and for joy reasons. Sex is fun. Sex is natural. Sex is fun. I always get bummed out when preacher types tell people that when you do things that God doesn't want you to do, it isn't any fun. A lot of things God doesn't want us to do is very fun. That's why it's called sin. That's why we do it. Just because we're having fun at it doesn't mean that it's wrong necessarily, but at the same time, just because we think it's okay doesn't mean that it is okay. It's fun in the right context. It's fun in the right situation. In the scriptures, there's not a single time when sex is viewed positively or communicated positively except when a man and a woman come together for lifelong committed covenantal relationship. That's the only time. So you can kind of try to interpret different verses this way or that way, but very clearly, if you just read this thing, there's not a single time when sex is positively referred to except a man and a woman who have made a public declaration in a committed relationship, committed marriage. Not a single time. And in that context, you get this fun, and you get this emotional, spiritual bond in this, and there's no bruises. Take a look at 1 Corinthians. I'm going to look here for you. It explains this. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 3, here's what it says. The husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and likewise, the wife to her husband. The wife's body does not belong to her alone, but also to her husband. In the same way, the husband's body does not belong to him alone, but also to his wife. Do not deprive each other except by mutual consent. Okay, I forgot something else I got to tell you. Here's the deal. I don't want any elbows going to the person next to you. I mean, you know, if you're here with someone you're dating, you're here with someone you're married to, your response should not be, oh man, yes, I know that person. And you're like. None of this stuff is for the person you're with today, okay? It's all for you. And I mean that. This needs to be a safe place. And when you walk out of here, you know, do not take this as all fodder to beat up or challenge the person who you came in here with. I want you to take this as God's instructions to you, and you figure out what this means to you. If this prompts great discussions coming out of here, awesome. But please do not use this as a weapon with the person you're with. In fact, that's how some of us use sex. We use it as a weapon. We use it as, I'm going to deprive this from you until you do this for me. You don't get this until you do this. You know this? And this is what the scripture says. No, when you come together, when you're like husband and wife, you're together. No, you are one and you ravish and enjoy each other and you serve the other person. And it's fun and it's pleasurable. You know, animals, when they have sex, it's really not all that pleasurable. At least we know that for sure in certain species. I mean, dogs, they get locked, pretty uncomfortable. Cats, they got ribs on their penis that go backwards when they come out. That's why cats are screeching. It's not a necessarily pleasurable experience. Yet for you and I, it is this fun, pleasurable experience. This is why in some parts of the world, it's so awful how people try to remove this pleasure from people. Female circumcision is very present in other cultures, very sad, where there's the snipping away of the clitoris because it's a pleasure and it shouldn't be pleasure. It shouldn't be fun. In fact, I ran across one statistic that said, estimated that 75% of all women in Egypt have had that procedure because the male-dominated cultures say, no, you can't have pleasure with this. This is not good. You can go to other cultures and there's actually a stitching of the woman as a young child. And then when they get married, say, okay, we'll unsnip this just so you can bear children. This is awful. God has given us all these sensors that we have because it's a blessing. It's a gift. And God says, oh, drink your fill. Enjoy this. Now, I would love to be able to have a time with only people who are about to be married. I'd love to have a time with only people who are married. I'd love to have a time with only people who aren't married and will never be married. I'd love to have a time with only 13-year-olds. I'd love to have a time with 50-year-olds and who are very sexually like, and they have no, they're not, don't see any way that they're ever going to get married. And so what do you do with that drive? I'd love to have a specific thing today for all of those, all of you in different places. And I'm not going to be able to do that today. Hopefully by the rest of this series, wherever you are, you're going to have stuff that's of value that you can apply. I'm going to talk a little bit about myself, though, because I've struggled with something and I've done something that I think all of us have done. It's called masturbation. It's called masturbation. Some of you are going to sit back around and going, What's preacher boy's going to tell us I can't do that? What is that about? What stinks? What is it? You know, and you're all like, you can't, you know, you're all bummed out about this. And Woody Allen, I love how he put it. He said, you know, don't knock masturbation. Sex with someone I love. By the way, for those of you who don't know who Woody Allen is, we didn't make up that name. Okay? We didn't know. So really, let's say, how many people never heard of Woody Allen? I mean, we're fine. No, I'm a people, you know, haven't. When I got married, I was a virgin when I got married. And I mean old-fashioned kind of virgin. I mean, I didn't have intercourse. I didn't lick on anybody. No one licked on me. I was old-fashioned virgin. And so you would think that I would come into marriage without any baggage and being able to completely enjoy myself and have a great time with Libby and all that stuff. And unfortunately, that hasn't been the case. It hasn't been the case in the earliest parts of our marriage because everything that we have going on in ourselves sexually, we bring to our current sexual relationship. And see, the problem with masturbation is it's not really, you know, the pleasure that you may derive from it, but it trains you. It trains you to be selfish. It trains you that sex is all about you. It trains you that life is all about you. That's the thing that most of us have to get over in our garden. We got to realize, no, it's not about you. Life is not about you. And so what masturbation does is it's not just you're having images of people, God, who's created, and you're having sex in their mind, and you're dishonoring God's sons and God's daughters. It's a training mechanism that trains us to be selfish, and so we go to the person and we are looking for them to please us because we've been pleasing ourselves this whole time. And this is one of the things that for me, why I have not been the kind of lover that really I should be for my wife. We have great sex, don't get me wrong. We have awesome sex, and it's because, primarily because of her, as opposed to myself. See, everything that we do sexually, we bring this stuff to our current encounter, and it affects the quality of all that the all of the relationships that we have. Sex is best when it's one-on-one. Sex is best when it's one-on-one. It's best when it's one-on-one, period, one person for the entirety of life. Let's be honest here. You know, when you had your first sexual encounter, you felt something coming away from that. When you had your first sexual encounter, you, when you saw your parents, if it was in high school or junior high, first time you saw your parents, you diverted your eyes. There was something, you know, when you had your first sexual encounter, you didn't just play PlayStation with somebody. When you saw that person, you realized there was a spiritual, emotional transaction. It was just different. It was weird. Something happened. And just because it's two consenting people doesn't mean there aren't ramifications for that. I've got a little gift here. Sex is a gift. So let's see what little gift we have. What sexual item could possibly be in a box? Let's see what we got. Duct tape. Don't mispronounce that. Duct tape. What does this have to do with sex? Let me see. I'm sorry. I'm going to do a little group interaction here. I'm going to try and only do people who I know. Hello, Jeffrey. How'd that feel? That feels nice. Ooh, I got pieces of Jeff here. Yes. Oh. Let me strap your hands together there. You're kind of close to each other. Okay, I'll pull it off there. You know, here's the deal. You know, now you have, there's like little fragments of them and him on you right now. How's that feel? Yeah, it feels good, you know. I go around and I could just kind of bring this on every person that is here. And the fact of the matter is a couple things. Number one, there are pieces of everybody who I've just been with that you are just now receiving now as well. And this is part of what happens with sex. The other thing that's part of it is, you know, as I come along, this stuff, it is getting less and less sticky. It's not as sticky or as adherent as it was when I first started. This mirrors spiritual realities of sex. First is this. When you have sex with somebody, you are having sex with everybody they had sex with. That's just a scientific, physical, biological reality. You are. This is why there are new STDs that pop up that weren't around in the 50s. It's because as new people come and they connect, different organisms mix and match, and new strands of sexually transmitted disease happen. I'm not trying to give a fear factor here. I'm just saying this is kind of what scientifically really happens. And it's part of the stuff that never gets talked about because we don't want to talk about the downside of having fun. You don't realize if you use a condom correct 100% of the time, you are 87% protected. If you use a condom right 100% of the time, it is 87% affected. Now, we don't totally realize that because we don't go around talking about genital gonorrhea. Hey, how's yours doing this week? Ah, man, you know, we don't talk about this. I'll tell you, it is a reality. Get a doctor to come down, sit, and talk about the kind of stuff that you and I are carrying around. I'm not trying to do a scare tactic. I'm just saying physically, that's the way it is. But leaving that apart, this thing was less effective every person I went to. You ever notice the first person you had a sexual encounter with? You were bonded with them. There was something that was special. That's why when you lose your first love, it breaks your heart like no one has before because your heart was fresh. You were sticky. The act of sex was this sticky thing, and you felt a bondedness, and then every time you had another encounter with another person, the act of sex got less bondedness, less bondedness, less bondedness. This is a spiritual reality of how God works, or how God allows our systems to work. The more you do a specific thing that God doesn't approve of, the more hardened you will become. And it's a defense mechanism in many ways. First time you ever cheat in your income taxes, you're going, oh man, I hope I don't get audited. You're feeling like, you put it in the mailbox, you're going, year six, doing the same thing, whatever. It's just kind of everyone does it, right? Everything that you can think of that you repeatedly do that God says, no, that's not my plan for how this gift is operate, you will eventually become hardened to it. Some of us been around the church, we started doing the crazy campaign and talking about this journey we're going to go on a year and a half, 2 years ago, and we decided, no, I'm not doing that, not doing it. So Ken does this thing, talks about this, and you're like, whatever, because it's like a pea going against a tank. You completely harden yourself. You said, no, I'm all about me. You're weird what you're doing, all that kind of, and you're hardened to that. You're not touched by that at all. And sexually speaking, a defense mechanism of the heart is when we have been walked on or relationships have been broken and the duct tape is gone, it isn't as sticky as it once was or is designed to be. I want to bring a friend of mine out. We had her out earlier to talk about this a little bit. Kathy, where are you? Kathy, come on over, Kathy. Kathy and I were having a conversation about this earlier. Kathy, you were over CSM?
Yep. Huh?
How are they doing over there?
It's pretty crazy. There's a ton of kids, and they're just kind of freaking out.
Because we're talking about sex over there, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, sex everywhere. No, just CSM.
All sex
here.
All the time. Yeah. A lot of people I know are not believing me about the stickiness thing. And you mentioned something to me this week about what you felt when you were first exposed to this, when you first started coming to the church about 7 years ago. Take us back on your journey.
This story is actually really personal to me because I sort of experienced it in this auditorium. A couple years back, you were talking about when you're having sex outside of God's design, which would be in a married relationship, how when you have sex with somebody, your two hearts come together, and it's like they're being knitted together.
Every sex act is another stitch.
Just another stitch. And so when you pull apart, you lose a piece of yourself in that. You lose a piece of your heart in that. And so you were talking about that, and I'd heard you say similar things before, and so I just didn't believe you. Like, I was like, that's ridiculous, you know? I had sexual relationships before I got married, and then I got married, and, you know, I have great sex with my husband. And he made a point. I really have to make a point that I have great sex with my husband. That was the one thing
volcanic.
That he required. Yes,
yeah,
he required that I say that. So you can congratulate him if you see him later. But I had sexual relationships, and then I got married, and everything was great there. So I was like, you know what? Casual sex worked for me. Doesn't work for everybody. That's fine, Brian, but it worked for me. And that's truly what I believed. And then you went on to say, you start talking about how your heart gets hard, and it's the duct tape analogy, that you're just less sticky. And I just felt like somebody punched me in the stomach. It was like God just so clearly spoke to me, and I just realized, I'm like, you know what? That's my problem. My heart is hard. I didn't feel the pieces anymore. I didn't feel the pulling apart.
The scar tissue was all there. Yeah.
So it just started me on this rather painful process of trying to figure out what this meant. I mean, I had lived this lie for so long, I really didn't even know what to do with it. So I just started seeing signs in my life, and there were things that were probably always there. I just only started seeing them after I started down this road. And the one thing specifically my husband would say to me sometimes, he'd be like, I just feel this disconnect with you. And so when he said that to me after I had heard this message, I just got kind of mad. I was like, what does that mean? Like, what do you mean a disconnect? Like, I don't even know what that means. And he's like, and you know, my husband's so awesome because he's just got a huge heart. And he's like, honey, I don't feel your heart. And I was like, here we go again. You know, like, I knew exactly what he meant. And the bottom line was that I didn't connect sex with intimacy anymore. Those two things were completely separate. And it was just hard because I had been, you know, just so in protection mode for so long that I didn't know how to get back.
So some of us in here might be in that situation. Some of us in here don't believe anything that's been said, and we're going to keep doing sex like we do PlayStation. others of us, we might feel like, man, I've never heard any of this stuff before, and oh no, there's something here, and I got something growing in my garden I never really noticed, and it's sort of out of control. I have no idea how I could function without it. So what did you do? Give that person a little counsel here, or all of us a counsel. What was your process like?
It was long and it was painful, but basically I started out just praying. I was like, God, please tell me what this means. Tell me what I'm supposed to do. How do I get back to that place? I mean, I really didn't even know how to get back there. I mean, I knew, like, I could remember what it used to feel like. I just needed to get back to that place. So I just started praying, and then I just started talking about it with my friends. It was like my friends were probably so sick of hearing about it, but I mean, we just talked about it, and my husband and I talked about it a ton, and just that's really how.
So where are you now with it? Would you say you're healed?
I would definitely say I'm healed, but it's funny because now I know, like, my defense is protection mode, and I know that. Like, and so my husband Carol will call it out, and it drives me crazy because I'm like, dang, he's got that one on me. So you know, but that's where I am. I would definitely say healed, but I know when I go back to protection mode.
I haven't said anything in here today that I haven't said or wouldn't say to my 7-year-old. And some people think kids can't hear. This is like, hey, man, we've got to talk about this stuff. The way I talk about it is the way I've talked with my kids since they could understand any words at all. That's my philosophy and living my philosophy as a parent. What about from your perspective, what you see in CSM, how would you say to parents about talking to their kids about this stuff?
I would say the biggest thing is that I think a lot of parents believe that they can't be the spiritual leaders of their children, especially in areas that they didn't do it right, because the lie that we believe is that we'll be hypocrites. Well, you know, I'll be a big fat hypocrite if I tell my kids that they shouldn't have sex before they got married because I had sex before I was married, or, you know, whatever it is, you know. But that is a lie. You can be the spiritual leaders of your children.
Just because I whack my thumb with a hammer doesn't mean I can't teach my kids
exactly
how not to whack their thumb with a hammer. I've been there. I felt that pain. Don't do that.
Well, and that's the thing. I think that so many people, they don't talk about the emotional cost. Like, we talk, I think kids, especially in school, they hear a lot about the physical cost, but they don't hear about the emotional cost. And you certainly don't see that on TV shows and everything else, because it seems that casual sex is very acceptable. But it's not. And I think that what students tend to believe is that God doesn't have something bigger and better for them. Like, because God has a plan for our lives, and we need to believe that, and we need to own that to help our kids understand that God has a plan for your life, and it's better than what you think right now, that there is a design out there.
That's awesome. You've got something new every time. That's fantastic. You know what, in here right now, there's footprints all over this place. You ever gone down to the beach and see people walk up and down the beach? And you go, how many people have walked on this beach? And you don't know, because the waves keep coming and washing away the footprints, but there's footprints all up and down that place. You might not have known it before, but there's footprints on hearts all over this place. People have walked on your heart. They've jumped on your heart, walked on you, maybe didn't intend to hurt you, and maybe never thought of it that way, but you're realizing now, man, there was some traffic that went through my life, and there was a hardening that's taken place. Great thing about beaches is there are waves that come and cleanse and put back to a new place. And this is the difference between self-help sex and God-help sex. Because God can do things for you and in you that you and I can't do in and of ourselves. And if you're just in the beginning of this journey right now where you're seeing that, you know, my garden has got stuff that I don't want and I need God's healing, I'm going to walk you through a little exercise if you want to. I'll invite Dave to come out. And just go ahead and bow your head. If you don't want to do this, that's okay. But if you do, I want you to just sort of picture your heart and picture what your heart looks like right now. What's on there? Maybe you see objects that you've done. Maybe there are specific dates that are attached to your heart. Maybe there's a person's specific face. Maybe there's footprints. Maybe there's crud. What do you see on your heart, on your duct tape? Now, if you really want God to do what only He can do, just see yourself reaching into your chest, opening yourself up to God, pulling out your heart, putting in your hands, however you see it. God, as we hold our hearts with the acts that are there, I see my selfishness on that. Would you bring your wave of mercy? Would you bring your cleansing wave of grace? You know, what God does is He brings wave upon wave of love that crashes and renews. See those waves crashing on that heart? Every wave getting cleaner and cleaner, softer and softer, more sensitive and more sensitive. You do not want this apparatus dulled. You want this sensitive to experience life to the full. God, bring your waves of healing, grace, and mercy upon our lives. And God, thank you that you are a God of patience. God of healing, God of love, God of grace. That's the name of Jesus that I pray. Amen. All right, we've got 3 more weeks of this. Hope it was good for you. It's good for me. When you came in, you got a little CD that shares something we talk about next level. We had a lot of people saying, oh man, I wish I had a copy of that. So we figured, oh, we'll make a copy of everybody if you want to hear it. It's kind of indicating where we're going as a church. And part of where we're going is we're going to see the Bengals play today at 1 o'clock. So get out of here. We'll see you. Bye.